Hey, what's going on? Doc Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast, and it is Tuesday, October 2nd. I am excited for this podcast to come out. This is a podcast between myself and my buddy Jim Floyd of Vertex, physical therapy specialist, in Columbia, South Carolina. I talked to his business partner, Brandon Vaughn, in one of the kind of first podcasts that we did. And it was really an interesting conversation because at the time, they had just started their practice not too long before we talked, and they decided to establish what's called a hybrid practice. So a hybrid practice is somebody that takes both insurance and is cash pay. And many practices are moving to this. They intentionally started that because they wanted to still be able to work with, for instance, a Medicare population. But they also want to be able to work with people for an hour, and they're able to do this by also taking insurance. They take a couple contracts like Blue Cross, and they take Medicare, and they still have cash pay. So it's maybe a third mix of each within their practice. And Jim gets into a lot of details with this and what they're going over. And what we're doing is we're comparing a hybrid model to a cash model. So the way that I went compared to the way that Jim and Brandon have decided to go. Either way, I think it's a good business model. And I think that it just depends on a couple factors. So we talk about how scalable they are, revenue potential, problems that you have to decide if you want to solve or not. The hybrid model has a lot of pros. The cash model has a lot of pros. And so this will give you guys just an honest kind of snapshot of what these two businesses look like. And maybe if you were thinking about going into business on your own, this will help you actually come up with an idea of which one you'll want to go after, right? The other thing is our mastermind group opens back up next month. If you have heard about our mastermind, have thought, man, that would be cool to be a part of a group of people that are trying to help each other be successful, and you have a physical therapy practice, or it could be any sort of practice, it could be massage, chiropractic, I don't care, as long as you have the best intentions for that person, you function in a cash setting, and you have a desire to want to help people move better. That's really important for us because when we get together, we move. We train Saturday mornings whenever we get together, and we have our mastermind weekends. We're big believers in movement as medicine and the idea that that needs to be part of what you practice. And we want nothing more than to help those people be successful and get more cash patients, be able to scale their business to a point where they can take a step back and they have a true business, and then they have their time and they have financial freedom in place. And the goal is for us to help everyone in the group get to that point. It's been amazing to see what we've been able to help people do in as short as 12 months for some of the people that have been in the mastermind. And we want to help as many people as we possibly can, but they have to be the right fit. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking to yourself, man, I would love to get some structured business help, some accountability, some guidance with all of this. I'm a really good physical therapist, but man, I don't really know how to market. I don't really know how to sell. I've never hired anybody, or I've never been taught how to do that. And I feel like that is the limiter. That's what's holding you back, not your ability to teach somebody how to squat better or your ability to dry needle somebody's butt, right? If your limiter is not butt dry needling, but it is business and understanding how to read a profit and loss sheet, then you need to take a serious look at our PT Entrepreneur Mastermind. This is something that only opens twice a year. It will open in November after our mastermind event, the first weekend in November. We already have a wait list of people that we want to interview and see if they're the right fit for this. And if you think you're the right fit, you're making at least $5,000 a month in a side practice or a full-time practice, and you're trying to scale that into something much bigger than that, then you can reach out to us. The easiest way to do that is to email ashley@athletespotential.com and reference the PT Entrepreneur Mastermind and that you would like to get on the wait list. So guys, if you're interested in that, shoot Ashley an email. We'll start interviewing people in November, and we're excited to bring more people into the group. And it is such a fun time when we get together. Imagine if there was like 20 of you in a room together, all talking about how to get people to squat better, deadlift more, why kettlebell swings are important for people that have back pain, and why elderly people should be doing Turkish get-ups. That's what we do, and then we learn how to get more people in the door and have more successful practices. So guys, as always, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It means the world to me. It's crazy to me to see that this is in 80 different countries and it's downloaded in 80 different countries, and we get, you know, anywhere between 10 and 12,000 downloads a month on average. Like, that's crazy. That's wild to me. And I'm so freaking proud of that. I'm so happy to see that this message has caught on, and we'd like nothing more than to help you guys be successful going forward. So again, thanks so much for listening. Enjoy the interview with my buddy Jim, and hey, who knows, maybe hybrid practice is the way you should go.
So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast.
What's up, guys? Doc Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. And today I get a chance to talk to my buddy Jim Floyd, who's him and his business partner, Brandon Vaughn, up in Columbia, South Carolina, are just doing some really cool stuff in our profession and in business. And it's actually something that I've been able to sort of like watch on the sidelines a little bit and what they're doing, because I've known Brandon for a while. And when he had his practice in CrossFit Carolina, is that what it's called?
Yeah, Carolina CrossFit.
Carolina CrossFit, okay. Because I taught a mobility wad course there and got to meet Brandon. And I was like, oh, hey, dude, you and me, we both got offices in gyms. That's pretty cool. And then to see the transition that you guys have gone through. So for people that are unfamiliar with Vertex and with you and Brandon, give us a quick sort of background about your business, how it started, and like where you guys are at today.
Yeah. So again, my name is Jim Floyd. Brandon and I opened Vertex in April of 2016. And we had both worked together in a couple other clinics. Brandon had a cash practice for around a year before that, just doing that part-time. And we decided we wanted to open something together. And so we opened in April of 2016 with a hybrid model versus just a pure cash pay. And we have grown from one clinic with two clinicians and an office manager to now we will be opening a fourth clinic and have 13 total employees right now, and we'll probably be hiring a couple more PTs in the beginning of 2019. So lots of growth, and it's been a lot of fun. Of course, it's always a lot of hard work whenever you have your own place, but that is what we wanted to do, and we feel like the way we were able to do it has been really rewarding for us, and we feel like it's a good thing for our profession with being able to kind of treat the way we do and how we kind of run our business.
Yeah, and it's just to give some context to this. So at your clinic, you guys are one-on-one with people for an hour, right?
Yes.
Okay. So and this is sort of the comparison that we wanted to do. And I thought this was a great idea. It's Jim's idea, by the way. So it was, hey, let's talk about the differences between a hybrid practice and a cash practice, because there's definitely are some pros and cons to both. But the underlying principle that we both really believe in is the fact that our profession gets watered down with high volume demand from large clinics, in particular ones that are owned by private equity firms that just really just look at revenue and are not looking at the people they're burning down in the process, which are our colleagues, and the lack of results that we're getting from people that we end up having to clean up the mess. I can't tell you how often I see people that are like, oh, I saw physical therapy already. It didn't help. I say, all right, what did they do? Well, they stretched my hamstrings and they put ice on my back. Like, well, no shit, it didn't help, because that's not really doing much for you, but they can bill for some of that stuff. So, you know, it's difficult to have this conversation, and Ashley and I just want to like, you know, yell at people sometimes. They're like, we're not like these other people. And you guys have done a really unique and, you know, impressive job of being able to have that core foundation of like what we feel is important in terms of actually helping people in a meaningful way and having that one-on-one connection. It's really hard to develop when you have three at once, and being able to do that in a way where you actually take insurance and have been able to do it and be, you know, net positive in terms of your business and see growth.
Yeah. And you know, we see that almost every day. We have a patient come in that is going to one of the factory clinics in town, and they just did the typical lay on the table, do straight leg raises, get some E-stem and that type of stuff. And you know, that's kind of one of the beauties of how we're operating is that we're still able to get the access to that patient because we are in network with their insurance. But then when also we can expose them into what real expert level PT is and not just the crap they get at the factory clinics.
Right.
And so that's been a huge thing for us with just being able to be able to still provide that high level service, but having that access to more patients.
Yeah, no, it's cool. And it's happening. You know, I mean, people are trying to solve this problem in different ways. For us, we've had success with, out of network cash-based routes. Some people are hybrid routes. Some people are not hybrid routes, and they basically just commit to getting what they can for a visit and trying to keep their overhead as low as they can. Yep. I think that what we want to really highlight is sort of the pros and cons of these two different models. And I would say that the decision that somebody makes in terms of like how to structure their business, probably it really comes down to what their long-term goal is. And you guys have, you know, some big aspirations of like how, you know, how you want to be big, right? Yeah. So is this, do you want to be South Carolina only? Or are you guys thinking, man, we can definitely, you know, scale this past one state?
Yeah. So whenever we opened our company, our goal was to always, we wanted to grow and we wanted to try to basically help as many people as we can. And so the way we could do that was just by growing the company. So we don't have any limits on how big we want to get as long as we can stay with the same ethos and not change how we treat patients. So we'd love to, you know, right now we're just in the Columbia market. We have some plans to move into other markets in South Carolina, then branch out outside of the state too. We want to, as long as we can get good clinicians that kind of understand how we want to treat and our approach with everything, I think the sky's the limit with that, because we just, if you see all the trends in PT and especially if all these factory clinics have all being bought up by bigger hospital systems or just kind of all these private equity firms and all that type of stuff.
Yep.
We should always be kind of that alternative, because we want to keep it how we are and how we run things and all. And so we should always kind of have that niche. And we've been able to really grow that part in our home base in Columbia, South Carolina. We want to try to continue to expand that.
All right, let's get into some kind of bullet points. So I basically wrote down different areas within a business, and Jim and I are going to kind of give you our answer for these areas. And the first one is, I would like to know, with your practice, so the original one that you guys still have, what was your like rough estimate startup cost associated with that? In particular, sort of like build out equipment, not necessarily like liquidity that you needed in case you were like negative, but what was the actual like build out cost for you guys to start?
Yes, sir. So we did a lot of research. We found a really good site that's high traffic, and we actually have a sublease in too. That's a performance training company that we shared a space with. So that helps with rent costs. What we ended up spending just on upfit costs and equipment expenditures was around $45,000 to $50,000. And we went the SBA loan route. At the time, you could not get a just regular business bank loan without any kind of company history or anything like that. So we went through the SBA process, and that is it's definitely doable, but it's a lot of paperwork. It's like quadruple the amount of just getting a mortgage. But so we did that, and we included a good bit for just general operating liquidity too, and just so we could make payroll as we grew and all that type of stuff. And
so like what was the total size of that SBA loan that you guys originally got?
I think we ended up getting a loan for $160,000.
Yeah. And you guys paid that off really fast, right? I remember.
We paid it off in 13 months.
That's awesome.
And so thankfully we, of course we had to put in some of our own money too, just as down payments. And
Right.
And with that, we expected that. And, but thankfully we did, it basically just worked kind of more as a line of credit versus just getting a big lump sum of $160,000. So what we needed, we used. What we didn't have to draw. So we were able to pay off our balance relatively quickly. So that's basically all the profits that we made that first year and a half or so, we just put directly to that so we could be debt free, and that would enable us to do a lot more things in the future.
Yeah, that's smart. And there's sometimes there are sneaky little programs that you can, they're hard to find out about, local governments. In some cases, I know here in Atlanta, there's a county that basically it's a county funded loan payment or a business loan program only for companies that are established within this this county. So it's actually like half of Atlanta is covered by this county. So if you open a business within that, they have great like lending rates. And I think you, it's all the way up to like $1 million in business loan, which is actually not that expensive depending on what you're doing. If it involves like development. So like what you guys are talking about, people hear $160,000, but from a business loan standpoint, I mean, that is like very, very small.
Oh yeah. We got off really cheap with opening the first one.
Yeah. So, okay. Startup costs for my cash practice were $3,000. A little less than that, actually. I remember that. And here's the difference is there, the way that I did it was very much like Brandon. So I found a gym that had like unused space. Basically, they had this space that was built out. They had a bod pod in there, and then they had somebody that had been working there. I think it was a chiropractor, and then he left, basically like moved overseas or something, and then. And then they had like a little waiting area and they had an office. So it was a really good fit. And all of the equipment in the gym, I basically had access to, which has saved me a ton in terms of startup costs. And my original rent was like $400 a month what it cost. Right. So, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, I guess like barrier to entry, this is one of the reasons why I think these cash practices have gotten so, popular is because, you know, people see that. And I would also, I would say this too, with the fact that, you know, Brandon having his cash practice, I would assume was very helpful for you guys when you got started, because he already had, people that were willing to pay him out of pocket. Mm-hmm. And he had, both of you guys had built a strong relationship as providers in that area. So when, you know, we sort of call it like building pressure, right? So like you built this pressure, you had this good reputation, and then leveraging that into your business, that probably was a great way to sort of like hit the ground running initially. Oh, did you guys get a bunch of people from like his other practice that he had?
Yeah, no doubt. We both had a pretty big following in town. And so, I mean, Brandon got a decent amount from where he had been doing his cash pay practice. And then and the previous job that we both worked at before we opened was awesome. They were very supportive of what we were doing. And so there's, you know, they said, you know, the patients that have come to specifically see you, you are welcome to take them with you whenever you go. And so they were really, really accommodating.
That's great.
On that. And then also we had a built-in patient population in Columbia to begin with. And so we ramped up. My second week we were.
What do you mean by that?
Because both of us been practicing for, I guess it was about 5 or 6 years at that point.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah. We had, you know how the word of mouth marketing goes and all that stuff. And so we just already had a following. We had, even before we opened, we went and did a lot of marketing at a lot of CrossFit competitions and all those different type things just to get the word out more.
Yeah.
People already knew who we were, but they didn't know we were opening our practice. And so just being able to get that out, going and talking to a bunch of CrossFit coaches, personal trainers, massage therapists, all that stuff. And we had some physicians who already knew us and trusted us with their patients. And so we were already getting those. So by the second week we were open, we were at 92% capacity, something like that.
Right, right.
And then it's kind of been like that ever since. But
So that's cool.
Basically.
Yeah. So, you know, when you look at startup costs, you have a couple things. Number one, I guess you have more, you know, in terms of like need. So it's a bigger space. You had an office, like an admin right away?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Yeah. So you had some sort of infrastructure there. And, you know, so there's definitely more there, but we'll get into some of the other things, as well, because there's a lot of pros to this model. Like that's not all that expensive to get started. Even though compared to like $3,000 is a lot more. So if it's a student listening to this and they're like, yeah, $160,000 loan, I can't do that.
Yeah,
but what I tell people a lot is like Brandon, for instance, doing that cash practice, it gave him options. So he could, it's very hard to say like, I have an insurance practice and then now I'm not going to take it anymore versus I don't take insurance directly. I'm just cash pay. And then moving to, I take insurance. People will probably be way more
excited
about that, you know? So if you're listening to this and you're like, I would love to, you know, eventually move to that. Well, the hardest part is starting in most cases. So if you find something that it helps you get there initially, then, you know, do that. And then you can grow into what your vision is after that.
Yeah.
So what's your typical population? What do you guys usually like? What's the gamut of the normal patients that you guys see there? Because you do take Medicare, correct?
We take Medicare, yes. So we still have a decent amount of really active people. So CrossFitters, weekend warriors type stuff. We kind of have the rep in town of, you know, we're not going to be the place where you just come in and say, okay, well, my elbow hurts doing this. We're going to help you get back to doing that versus just saying, don't right. do that. And so we get a lot of active people. We see a good bit of Medicare population. But the really cool thing with that is it's usually more active Medicare.
Okay.
So that they want to play tennis and golf and be active and go hiking and all that type stuff. And it's not necessarily the person who just goes and sits and reads all day or sits in front of the TV and doesn't want to do any kind of exercise.
Yeah.
And so generally still more orthopedic Medicare type stuff. We do get some balance stuff and that's perfectly fine. That's maybe 5% of our population. So it's not much at all, but that's still fun too, to have that every once in a while.
True. I think it's
a good population for us.
Well, if you see that every day, there's a lot of monotony. What you probably avoid is a lot of the work comp, sort of like people that are not necessarily interested in getting better.
Yes.
Like, that would be, they don't want that. They want to hang out somewhere where they can like walk on a treadmill for a few minutes and then go put an ice pack on. Like you guys are actually making people do shit. I was there.
Yeah.
Like Brandon take some Medicare aged woman through like lateral stepping, like ladder drills. Like she was getting ready for the combine. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. And you know, and so a lot of times we kind of get patients that self select and you know, sometimes we don't have people that they might come for the first two visits or so and they see how we're going to approach things and that's just not what they want to do.
Right.
And so they just kind of self-discharge and you know, that's fine if it's, they're not going to work out with kind of how we approach things and they just don't want to go lay on the table and just kind of do some waste your time stuff. That's their prerogative. So we really get the people who are really motivated to get better.
So our population sounds very similar actually, except minus the Medicare population. We don't see anybody of that age, but it's, you know, we just see a lot of people that are motivated to get better. They value their time primarily. Yeah. I mean, for us, that's actually one of the best parts of the way the practice is set up is we never have to wonder if somebody wants to get better or not. Like we know that if they're not getting better, it's our fault. And, you know, we miss something or we need to progress them up the chain to the next logical, you know, medical provider to see, you know, if there's something else that needs to be addressed. But definitely sort of, I would say our average population is between like 35 and 55, but people that are, they're active, they're typically proactively trying to take care of their health, which is pretty cool. Like that's not something that I thought we'd see a lot of, but probably I would say a quarter of our practice at this point is people that are being like proactive with their health versus reactive. And I would like it to be even more than that. You know, it just, I think we get such cool outcomes with them. And like we had this guy I just saw yesterday, a year and a half ago, we started working with him. He has really bad scoliosis and he kept hurting his back. And he always like, he's a sailor. He likes to sail. He's from Charleston. And he always wanted to go to Croatia to go sail with his friend who's a boat captain over there. And he would try to train. He'd hurt his back. And so he finally came to see us. His son actually saw us like a year before that for something unrelated. He's a CrossFitter. And so he sent his dad to go see us. And his wife was like so upset whenever I taught him how to deadlift that she actually came in the office and talked to him.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, you're going to hurt my husband. And I go, no, trust me. Yeah. If he doesn't do this, he's going to continue to get hurt. I had to talk her down.
Yeah.
Well, I just saw him yesterday. And it's somebody that we see on sort of an ongoing basis. We do a lot of strength and conditioning work with them at this point. And he just got back from a week of sailing in Croatia with this guy that you know was his friend. He taught how to sail. And he was, you know, sailing is physically difficult. He was doing it all of it. But instead there's a four-man crew on a 50-foot boat or something like that. And he's just like, dude, I was doing everything. My back didn't bother me one bit. And he, for years, for decades, honestly, he thought that he couldn't do anything. So it's people like that that are like the fun people to work with, you know?
Oh, man, it's awesome. And be able to make that big of a difference in somebody's life, it's so cool. That's our daily reward.
Yeah, so it's awesome. And I love this. There's a Teddy Roosevelt quote. I'm going to screw it up, but he basically says, like, you're either going to rust out or you're going to wear out. It's up to you. And he says, I choose to wear out. Right. So, you know, we want to work with these people that they want to be active because you're either going to rust out or you're going to wear out. So I think we have a very similar population with that. Now, here's an interesting thing that I'd be interested to dig into a little bit. And it's revenue per patient visit. So for you guys with taking insurance, what's the mixture between like Medicare, other private insurances, probably primarily Blue Cross, and then cash. And then of the three mixed together, what's typically the average per visit? So that hour revenue that's generated for the clinic.
Yeah. So our payer mix tends to be 10 to 15% cash pay, 10% out of network where we still bill out of network. And then we see, so the federal payers, so Medicare and TRICARE, would comprise probably 35%, and then Blue Cross will be the remainder. So that'd be 40 something or so.
Okay.
And Blue Cross is far and away the most popular private insurance in South Carolina.
Yeah. So, okay, between the three of them, averaging that out, like for if you see somebody in an hour, like what's the average amount of revenue generated per visit?
So if we bill efficiently and do all the play the coding game and doing all that stuff the way it should be done, we should average between 105 and 115 a visit.
So 105 to 115. Now, and there are certain things in South Carolina where like you can't bill for dry needling, right?
Yes, that's correct. So so we actually just do a cash charge for dry needling.
And, okay, so that's on top of the average whatever billable.
Yeah, so the average that you would bill to insurance is going to be a little bit less when you do dry needling because you can't bill for that time.
I see.
And so we do that cash charge that kind of makes up for that other part.
Makes sense. Yeah. So okay, and this is where I think is interesting between the two models because there's okay, let's say 110 roughly is average per visit amount roughly somewhere in there. So ours is around like 180 and maybe a little higher. Depends on the month and how many packages we have. And we also include comp visits into that. So that's a net zero, but it's still a block of time. So we average it in. So when we look at like revenue per person and volume, this is what I think is really interesting. So you guys have committed to not seeing multiple people per hour. And I hope people understand that this is why clinics see multiple people per hour is because they want that average time, that average amount of money that's generated by a PT per day to be higher than that.
Oh yeah.
You know, and they do that because, well, in most cases, like, yeah, they may have private equity that they owe, you know, a certain amount of profitability to, whatever it might be. But you guys just put your stake in the ground and said, nope, this is the way we have to work with people. And, I have a lot of respect for that.
You know, we went into it knowing that, you know, we could probably make a lot more money if we were going to see multiple patients at the same time. But that's not how we wanted to practice.
Right. So this brings me up to kind of the next piece of this, which is scalability. So, you know, I'm sure you guys realize you said 13 employees, how many of those are PTs?
So we have 6 full-time, we have 3 part-time, and then we have 3 admin staff, 3 to 4 admin staff.
What's considered, so they're seeing like a 50% schedule part-time?
So the part-time ones, they're just PRN really. So they're, most of them, 2 of them are PhD students at the local school. So they're doing they may only see 2 or 3 patients a week. So it's not a lot. It's more just giving them the opportunity to be able to still be in clinic because we have such a strong affiliation with the local PT school.
Right.
They're extremely high level clinicians. We just want them to be in here as much as they want. So there's not a whole lot of productivity out of those 3 ones, and we just pay them on a per patient basis anyway.
Yeah. So you guys are like, what's considered a full schedule for you guys?
So a full schedule would be 40 patients a week, so 8 a day. Okay.
So if you guys are hitting 90% of that, 35 roughly.
Yeah.
It's just so hard to run at 100%, you know, with people that have honest
definitely
concerns, to pick their kid up or something they didn't realize, you know, so So that's a lot. So you guys are probably somewhere in the range of 1,000 visits a month, or, you know, somewhere near there.
Yeah, it's getting up there. It's our main location. We are averaging, with people being out on vacation and all those different type things. We're 700 or so a month, and it's kind of up and down. So one caveat with that is, so Brandon and I do not work a full 40-hour patient care schedule anymore. And so we're only seeing 32 patients at the most a week.
Now, that's still a lot, man. We've talked about this before. You can hold that clip for a while. I've been there, and where you're at, it's interesting. It's such an important role to be able to steer that, right? And I definitely think that Brandon falls more into sort of like a clinical excellence role. I mean, people sort of have inherent biases of what they're really interested in. You seem like you have more desire to improve in the business side of things, which is good, because you can't have both you guys do each one of those. It just doesn't work out. But from a scalability standpoint, okay, with these other locations, let's say you guys are somewhere, I don't know, in the range of like 1,000 visits a month. For us, so we've had our practice since June of 2014, and like average month for us is somewhere between like 270 to 300 in terms of patient visits, so hour-long patient visits. So about probably less than a third to a quarter of where you guys are at. So when we look at scalability, it's not a competition at all. Like it's so difficult to scale a cash practice compared to an insurance-based practice, there's such a smaller pool. But this is what I want people to keep in mind. So it's basically, yes, you can have a higher average visit rate, but where you guys have figured out how you can scale, really it's a lower visit rate, but it's a volume. It's a volume number for you at this point.
Yeah, definitely. And and that's what we went into it. We knew that that's how we wanted to operate, and that's when we decided to do the hybrid model and selectively contract with only certain insurances based on what their payments would be.
Yeah.
We had some other ones that we looked into, and they only paid $65 a visit. And that's just, it's ridiculous. And we didn't even bother trying to negotiate with them or anything. And others, we're in network with one workers' comp, and, they ended up offering us like $70-something, and we went back to them with just a bunch of stats that we track and all that, and got it bumped up a lot. Sometimes they'll get kind of how we practice and how we're going to end up saving them money. But then other ones, they're just like, we tried to negotiate with this other one, and they're like, we'll give you $1 more a visit. And it's like, no, that's not worthwhile for us.
It's a good counter offer.
Yeah.
that's how you know that, like, it's funny when you're small, you're really meaningless in many ways to these big companies. Like, you have very little leverage, you know? So probably like, I'll give you $1 more.
it's ridiculous.
See if that changed your mind. No, that's crazy. Let's get into some of the nuts and bolts of the practice now. Okay, you guys take insurance. So you guys have to have somebody, I'm assuming in-house, that's doing billing and collections.
Yes.
And then you have accounts receivable. So how many people do you have doing billing? And then what's the typical payment period for you guys to actually be reimbursed via insurance?
Yeah. So when we first started, we actually contracted with a third party billing company and just paid them a percentage of the collections. And our plan with that was, when it got to the point where what we were paying the third party company became as much as what we would just pay somebody to do it in-house, that's when we were going to switch.
Sure.
And so we have our in-house person. We just have this one person. She does a great job. We tend to, as soon as we complete our note, it flows into our billing software. She usually submits it either that day or the next day. So it's almost immediate. It tends to take, Blue Cross is around kind of 10 days to 2 weeks before we get paid on those claims. And Medicare is a little bit longer, but it might be 2 to 3 weeks. So it's not a big, big delay at all. And so one of the other things too is, whenever we do have the insurance patients come in, you know, we're going to give them the explanation of benefits. And what we do is, we estimate out what it's going to cost per visit for them. And so they know that up front, and we collect that up front. So we don't kind of post bill a lot of them.
Yeah.
We'll collect it up front, submit it to the insurance, and then if there's any remainder, we'll bill them for that. But we all know this, as business owners, that the more you have to try to collect later, that percentage of collections is going to go way down.
Oh, yeah. It also irritates people, man. I mean, think about how many just aggravated patients come in and they've got a $200 bill from something that they had 3 months ago and they forgot about it. I think it's actually one of the really maybe kind of better parts of a cash practice is just clear transparency. It's like,
oh yeah, I agree. Yeah,
this is it. And then for you guys, it's like, this is what we think. It's maybe not as clear as that. And it sort of depends on other factors based on their insurance.
Yeah. And so usually what we'll do is we'll just give them a range. We'll say, you hadn't met your deductible yet this year. You know, insurance might cover 80% of the charges. You're going to be responsible for 20% after you've met the deductible. So before deductible, it should be between $100 and $120 per visit. After deductible, it should be between $20 and $24 a visit. And just so they know that, and that tends to clear up most of the confusion. But probably once a month, we have a patient that has gotten the EOB that came to their house from the insurance company, and it shows our base fee schedule where, I can't believe you charged me $280 for this visit. And because they don't understand the game you have to play with the insurance company of doing the agreeing to the discount and the adjustments and all that type of stuff off of the base fee schedule. So that is a huge advantage cash base wise, because it's just there, it's just that, and that's it. You don't have to deal with any of that other stuff.
Oh, and it's less resources too, right? Like, we don't need somebody in-house to manage billing. We don't necessarily need as much as administrative help. But I would assume that once you get that in place, your ability to cover other locations can roll into that one person.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Like, how many people could one biller sustain? Yeah. How many practices, I guess, is a better way to put it.
We've had some conversations about that. And so we think right now we've got so six full-time people billing out a good bit. We could probably stand to have maybe one more practitioner and have our current billing person handle all that load. Mm-hmm. But as we grow past that, we're going to have to hire some more staff to handle that. Just we really value our employees, and we don't want them to feel like they're overloaded we don't want them to get burnt out, because we hire really high level people. We want to give them support, and we want to make sure they have the support that they need.
Yeah. I think that's smart, man. I mean, we go out of our way to try to find people that we think are well above average. And that I talked to one of our PTs the other day. Like, he came up to Fort Campbell with me. I was teaching a 2-day course. So we had like 5.5-hour drive each direction, you know, and then plenty of time while we were there. And, I told him, I said, when we hire, like, and the way we structure things, we want our employees, our people that work with us, to enjoy their job so much, and for their peers to be so jealous of it, they'll never want to leave.
Yeah.
So a lot of things that we do are not for profit purposes, but it's for retention.
Sure.
And you have to, if you really want to put the time and effort into growing somebody into a really good provider, or they come in with a pretty decent skill set and you help improve it, it's difficult to keep them, man, because, you know, maybe they see another opportunity or they get offered another opportunity. That's happened to us. People have tried to poach our clinicians before, and I mean, they just don't want to go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's always been my philosophy with that is, you know, if you're able to treat people well and feel like they're supported and they really enjoy what they're doing, they're probably going to stay. And, but if you do see, if you have employee turnover, it's probably something more wrong with me than it is those employees. And so
that's a great point. I don't think a lot of people would say that. That's a super valid point that most people do not think that it's a them problem. And I could see this from a leadership standpoint. I learned a lot about this stuff when I was in the Army. I would see like a new company commander come in that was basically in charge of about 100 people. And it's the same people, exact same people. Someone that was like incredibly good leader could have this thing like fine-tuned, and they were just humming. And then the same group of people, somebody else comes in and it's like the misfits. Yeah. You're like, dude, this is the same people. There's one variable that's different and it's you, you know, and then, so anyway, I look at it the same way, man. If our people are unhappy or something's wrong with our company, it's like, what am I doing wrong? Like what are Ashley and I doing, doing wrong? So, all right. So from a management standpoint, definitely. I mean, the cash stuff is so simple. That's one of the big draws to it.
Yeah.
But one of the other factors that I wrote down was sellability. Yeah. And, you know, we're obviously like ethically sound human beings. We're trying to do the right thing for our profession. But when we start a business, it's a lot of work. It's a huge investment, both time and monetarily. You could be doing something else. And to have an entity that you grow that you can potentially sell one day is one of the bigger perks of a business. So for you guys, the way that you structure it, what do you see that, I mean, not that you're trying to sell your business, but the potential to be able to sell, do you guys feel like it's there in a hybrid practice?
I definitely do. You know, it's funny. We got, we were less than a year old and we got approached by a national company about purchasing our clinic, and we didn't really have any interest at that point because it was just me and Brandon and so we weren't at that point. We actually just got a business valuation done just for some future consideration stuff. And it's pretty good. We were very pleased with where we are. And I think that comes into being able to scale out. And we know that the more locations you have that generate some revenue, then that's going to create a higher multiplier for your value. And I think that's where being the hybrid and having that access to just more patients and being able to scale up more can make a huge difference in just in business valuation.
100%, man. I do think that you could sell a cash practice. We actually got approached by a group about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, about potential acquisition.
Yeah.
We thought it was a bad fit. Like, it's probably similar to what happened with you guys. But the scalability is a huge factor when it comes to valuation. The other thing, I've actually learned about this recently because a friend of mine in my entrepreneurs group that I'm part of here in Atlanta was actually, she basically brought a partner on. So she sold like a third of her business to this person whenever they brought on this person to partner with her. And it's a licensing business. So it sounds kind of weird, but she like basically takes images from artists or it could be like well-known kind of cartoon stuff. And they basically license it to put it on all kinds of crap, like backpacks and notebooks. And I learned so much about all these like weird little businesses I never knew existed, but they kill it because they get a percentage of every little thing that's sold. And so she had to bring somebody on, and because they have so much recurring revenue, their valuation was actually really, really high.
Yeah.
I know that PTs in most cases, like PT practices are, the highest I've ever heard of was a 12 multiplier. That might be higher than that has happened. Mm-hmm. But, you know, usually it's between like 3 and 5-ish, somewhere in that range. Depends on your size, but you're right. If you have big market share, it goes up, but the recurring revenue is interesting. And it's actually something that I feel our profession does a really poor job with, because we're dictated that we have to do that via insurance. When your plan of care is up, you know, it's over, but a quarter to a third of our business is recurring. Yeah. And it's because people see a lot of value in doing proactive stuff. I'm not even sure if you can do that with an in-network practice. Could you guys do that and say like, hey, you know, let's meet once a month. Let's work on, you know, these things. I guess it depends on their practice act and then you know, what you're doing with them. But have you guys looked at any of that stuff?
Yeah. So to answer the first part, so a lot of it just depends on your insurance contract. If you're going to provide skilled PT services and somebody has Blue Cross, you have to bill Blue Cross. You can't just say, oh, well, this patient's going to pay me cash.
So I guess that's sort of the gray area of like what's considered skilled PT.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Okay. So we've looked into doing some things like a concierge PT type thing, once a year wellness visit, or once every 6 months wellness visit, where we just do like a mobility assessment. So when I do my golf assessments, I don't bill insurance for that because that is more of a performance assessment and that type of stuff. So we've been able to do some of those type things, running assessments as well, all those type things we can do cash based because we're not technically providing a medical service.
Right.
This is kind of a screening or performance evaluation and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So we've been able to have those kind of different revenue streams too.
Yeah.
But it does, you really have to really clearly define what you're doing, right? Because you don't want to get into a situation where you're violating a payer contract and then you can have some issues with that.
Yeah. And this is, you know, these are all things that people have to take into account whenever they decide to say, yeah, I'm going to take, you know, this insurance or this contract or whatever it is, because that's exactly what it is. It's a contract, right? So for us, it's just a contract between us and the patient, or the, you know, the person we're working with, versus trying to figure out, is this skilled PT? Is this not? Is it, well, I guess that sort of reflects on your practice act as well. But, you know, going back to it, like really the big factors for sellability are recurring revenue and then market share. So like number of practices. So you guys can absolutely crush it on number of practices, and that can be rolled up and worth a lot of money. The challenge for me is, I don't know, like, this is sort of thing, you have something you could potentially sell, but like, what's the end result there? For me, I don't know if I necessarily want that to happen, because the people that would buy it in most cases is going to be somebody either a bigger group that's probably has a lot of private equity money behind them.
Yep.
So, you know, you and Brandon ride off in the sunset and you go, you know, chill out in Charleston the rest of your life. And then everybody flips, they flip your company, and then everybody's seeing high volume. And it's like, holy crap, man, they just screwed up what we worked so hard for.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure it would have to be a very specific person
being
involved that you felt could help you grow, but maintain your values.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, that's kind of, our plan has been, you know, we want to grow and we want to, as long as we can continue doing it the way we do it. But also, it's going to get to the point where we want to continue to maintain ownership, but we're not necessarily having to be involved in day-to-day operations and all that stuff. And we have really good people who are running things and all that. And I think that that's kind of the goal of most business owners, is to get to the point where the business does not need you. And, so we can kind of get to where we can still have monetary benefit, and, you know, we can see our baby and how it's grown and all that type stuff, but kind of get the right people in place where it can continue to grow without us too.
Well, and it's not, you know, it's not that you want to be involved in forever, right? You're exactly right. Like the idea of a real business is that it's something that functions and grows when you're not around.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's the goal for everybody. That's so hard to get to. And that's what everybody strives for, is you bring these people on, you bring on, you know, assets and people, and then you spend time. So you have time assets you're pouring into them to help them understand how things run. You're putting assets into development of systems, and then those systems are what people run, you know, and so that way they can be interchangeable with other folks. And that right there is just, it just takes so much effort, so much time. Very few people get to a point where they can do that. And then the thing that I find really cool, and you can do this in any version, it could be hybrid, it could be cash, whatever, is the ability to eventually get to a point where you get where you're talking about, which is taking a step back, becoming a business owner, having time to think about what you want your business to look like and what it to do, and having time freedom associated with that, where you can start to really do like the higher level things, and you become the owner, not necessarily, you know, practicing. You guys are still seeing a big clip of 32 people is a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you guys, that's tiring. I've done it. I mean, it's fun for sure. It's fun to work with people. Right now, my clinical day is every week I see maybe 10 people, and it's actually more fun for me to see 10 people than it was to see like 30 something, because I like really look forward to those like clinical times, because it's cool to connect with people too. So, you know, you guys make a point where you're like, Jim's here on Tuesdays seeing, you know, whatever, 8 golfers, whatever you like, you know, and that's awesome. So, okay. Now, talk to me about this. So with employees, well, you guys have 13 at this point, how much stress is involved with management of people?
There's a decent amount. And we're very blessed in that we have really good employees, but there's always things that come up.
Sure.
And, you know, we're pretty, we take our time with the hiring process. And so we feel like we know who we're getting whenever we do hire somebody.
Yeah.
We still got to invest a lot of time in training them, providing mentorship for them and all that. And then we also just have just all the logistics of a new hire, of making sure everybody's getting paid. Handling all the different, so if we do a productivity bonus, making sure that that's calculated and they got that right. And, so yeah, it takes a good bit of time. And that was one of my biggest struggles kind of as we grew over the first couple of years is because we ramped up so fast. A lot of the processes that I wanted to have in place didn't get put in place because I was just up to my eyeballs in patients all the time.
Yeah.
And so as we made a couple hires that enabled me to at least have some time for admin and to start working on those type things and kind of getting things in place. So we're still not there yet. We're a lot closer than we were 2 years ago. But we still have, I've got a lot of systems in place now where a lot of things just happen automatically versus me having to have my hands in everything.
Right.
But still I am involved and I tend to be the HR person, the financial officer and all that type of stuff. So all that still comes back to me. And so definitely some stress there, but it's, I'd much rather have that stress versus just working for somebody else.
I agree, man. You know, it'd be funny when you and Brandon need to plan like a 2 week vacation where your families, you know, or maybe you spend so much time together. You guys just plan vacation at the same time. You go somewhere separate and, but do that and both you guys be gone. And I remember the first time Ashley and I left for like a week, we were like super worried that everything is going to fall apart.
Yeah.
But people are smart. And they make intelligent choices, the right choices. If your culture is ingrained in, you know, those people as they grow and they learn about your company and they fit their roles really well. So, when that happens, you guys, let me know because I think that's like a time to celebrate because that means you've built something in a way that you don't necessarily have to be. Not to say that you can be leave forever, but if you can take that time away and decompress and you know get some solid family time back, you've done it, man. That's the hard part for people with business.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, and we've experienced that some. We've been able to take some vacations and be out of town and. And, you know, I've always tell our office staff and all that. And I was like, you know, if there's any questions about anything that you don't feel comfortable answering, just shoot me a text and I'm happy to help. And you know what? I mean, go a whole week. I don't hear anything. Come back. Everything is fine. Everything's good. And so that was, you know, it's kind of like watching your kids grow up too.
It totally is.
Like I see all our young PTs and they're just doing awesome with their patients and all that stuff. And then there's some ethical decisions made and they make really good decisions on things or how they're going to explain something to a patient or if there's an aggravated patient they need to talk down or something like that. And they just knock it out of the park. And I was like, man, that's like a proud dad moment for me. And
that's a great way to explain it. Yeah. I mean, I agree. It was, I feel like the first day that we sent, Jack to like real school, you know, like kindergarten, mm-hmm. or I guess it's kindergarten was considered. And, you know, you don't know. You're like, you don't see what they're doing all day. You know, you're not really sure. And then, but your employees, it's kind of like that as well, especially like these junior PTs we spend so much time with. Man, I feel like very invested in them. I want their futures to look, you know, really bright and for them to feel like they have opportunity. But for us, it's probably the coolest part of owning a business. And one of the more challenging parts of owning a business is the development of people.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's hybrid or it's a cash practice, if you want to scale past just yourself, which, you know, I hope that everybody has aspirations to do somewhat of that, even though you may want to still be clinically, you know, seeing a lot of people, you know, the development of others is just, that is where it's at. And that's what we've spent so much time in. And I think that's, we've got so much return on, you know, so for you, it's cool to see it. I'm excited to see where you guys, you know, go over the next, you know, few years and, you know, it's an interesting approach to the problem that we have within our profession right now. I think you guys are doing a good job of trying to solve it.
Yeah. Thanks.
That's it. All right, guys. Hey, real quick, if anybody wants to reach out to you, if they're interested, they're listening to this or like, damn, this guy sounds awesome. I want a job. Or, you know, they just want to touch base to see what's going on. Where can they reach out to you guys?
Yeah. So our website is vertexpt.com. Feel free to email me. I'm jim@vertexpt.com. Also on Instagram at FloydDPT. We have Facebook page as well for Vertex. And so any of those avenues are great for connecting. And if anybody has questions kind of about our model or anything like that, I'm happy to help with that too. I really love the business side and the finance side. So I like, I'm all for people that want to pursue this model or have questions about the model. Happy to help with any of that.
Well, you can tell, man, it's obvious. So, you know, I appreciate your time. It's always fun to chat with you. I'm sure we'll set one up again in the next like 12 months or whatever. We'll check back in.
We'll see
where both of us, you know, are at that point too. So anyway, guys, thanks so much for listening and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, real quick before we go, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I'm overwhelmed with how many positive reviews we've had on iTunes so far, and we have over 100 reviews currently, and just in the last 9 months of starting this practice. The other area I'm really proud of is our PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group. If you want to get involved in the conversation and not just listen to me talk to you and our guests about what's working in our businesses currently, head over to Facebook and join the PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group. It's really simple. We'd love to have you in the community, and there's so much you can learn from everybody that's in there. I can't wait to see you there. Thanks so much for listening.